This episode of the Spread Aviation Podcast deals with some adult themes. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to episode 42 of the Spread Aviation Podcast. I'm Rob, and today's episode is called Grief is Uncomfortable. This is an episode that's kind of been brewing in the back of my mind for a very long time, and it's kind of been this nagging, pestering subject, I suppose. And it's come from the experiences that I've had in the aviation world, as well as things that I've witnessed and seen or heard other people talk about. And the previous 41 episodes have had relatable experiences, mainly on the positive side of aviation. And definitely wanted to share all of that passion for aviation, but that passion has also had with it the high roads and low roads, ups and downs, peaks and valleys, if you will. And in this industry, in the aviation world, it is not one that is without risks. So is life. I mean, life, living life, leaving the house, getting out of bed every day, and even staying in bed if you stay there, if you decide to do that, has risks involved. And so one of the potential outcomes in the execution of flying and being in the aviation world is the possibility of a fatal event or something that shakes you to your core, scares you. And in episode 7, I talk about landing on a road in Ohio when I was still working for Kent State University. And during the recording of that episode, I'm pretty sure that I had at least had one, maybe two drinks prior to and possibly one during the recording of that episode. Because even talking about it, thinking about it, can take you back mentally to those events, especially when you're recalling them. It's essentially reliving it, except it's in a little more of a prolonged experience. But the reason that this episode is called Grief is Uncomfortable mainly is because that's true. But as those wise prophets Beavis and Butthead once said, if you didn't have things that sucked, you couldn't have anything that was good either. And so we're going to take a little bit of time in this episode to talk about my personal experiences, and maybe you out there have had similar experiences and you can relate to this as well. And I want to encourage people to write us emails, send us something, hello@spreadaviation.com, or send us a message on any of the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, any kind of comments that you want there. If you have anything to add to this, or if there's anything you need to share, because we all need to be there for each other, especially when bad things happen. Now, I knew from a young age that I wanted to be a pilot, that I wanted to fly airplanes. And so movies like Top Gun and Iron Eagle and building model airplanes and going out to the local airpark or watching airplanes fly overhead, that stuff really interests me. And there wasn't anybody that I knew of in my peer group or at my high school that was also interested in that same thing. So it kind of felt like I was a little bit alone. Gaining my certificates and ratings at Kent State University and coming home on the occasional weekend to Salem, Ohio, and stopping in at the airport and eventually getting a job working there as a line crewman, I was very surprised one day when I walked in and sitting in the office was a gentleman who was a senior when I was a freshman, and we played soccer together in high school, and his name was Lance Bricker. And I was like, hey, what are you doing here? You learning to fly? And he goes, no, I'm a CFI. Well, he had gone to a different university than I had. And we didn't keep in touch. We weren't necessarily particularly friends as freshman to senior. And we weren't exactly in the same social groups. But I always knew him as a good dude. He wasn't like a senior who was going to pick on an underclassman just because they were an underclassman, but he also wasn't going to take any crap from anybody. And I remember specific events that happened on the soccer field that gave me a large amount of respect for Lance, and was really awesome to see somebody that I knew from school that was also doing this flying thing, and I thought that was really, really awesome. And this would have been probably 2004, 2005, sometime around that time period. And so getting to work a little bit with Lance and see Lance operate and see somebody else that shared my passion for aviation was really, really neat and inspiring. I remember coming home from school in early February 2006. I was going to go have dinner with my mom. My dad was out of town. I brought my girlfriend. I wanted mom to meet my girlfriend. And as we were arriving at the restaurant, my mom had said, "Hey, did you know Lance Bricker?" I said, "Yeah, I know Lance." She says, "Well, he was killed in a plane crash on January 31st. And I had no words. This was the first time that I had been close to or this close to someone who had passed, who had died in the aviation world, who had died in an airplane crash, who had even had a crash. And I couldn't do anything but hug my girlfriend and cry. Just the strongest emotional response that I think I could have had. I had lost, you know, grandparents at this time. I'd lost some family members. I'd lost some pets and things like that. But this, it wasn't even as if Lance and I were that close. But because he was in aviation, he was a brother of mine. And that was a very hard meal. That was a heck of a way for mom to meet the girlfriend. But she, my mom also said that the calling hours were that night. And I wasn't dressed up or anything like that. But there was no way I wasn't going to go. And being there and seeing all those people from high school who were grades above me, and they were kind of wondering what I was doing there, but I wasn't there for them. I don't even know if I was there for me, but I knew I had to be there, and I had to say something to his twin brother, and I had to say something to his family, and I had to say something to his fiance, and I didn't know what any of that was going to be, but all I could say was, "I'm sorry for your loss." And I wasn't at the calling hours very long, but it brought home that reality that things happen in this industry. And it sent me on a little bit of a quest to learn as much as I could about what had happened to Lance, because I knew him as a good pilot. I knew him as a good man, and it didn't make sense. It didn't make sense. Now, I'm not here to talk about the how and why of these accidents, but I want to talk about what we as generally type A people in the aviation world may tend to suppress, and that's a little bit of the emotion. One of the things about grief, especially for us in the professional environment when we lose another professional, is we are looking to find meaning in what has happened. And that may lead to some speculation, people to jump to conclusions or things like that. And I suppose luckily we have the NTSB that will piece things together, and accident investigators who will piece things together and figure out what has happened, so that maybe the rest of us can learn from these events and not repeat them in the future. But that drive to find meaning had led me for years prior to even Lance's accident to comb through NTSB reports and to try and figure out why. Why did these airplanes go down? Why did these pilots have an accident or an incident? And so I was familiar with the dockets and the reports and things like that by the time that the Lance's accident had happened. And like anything, there's a chain of events. And so we as pilots need to definitely recognize when that chain is happening and break it as soon as we can. But on the grief side, before we have all those answers, we're going to have maybe a multitude of reactions.
You know, I'm Irish, and Irish people, they don't tell you a thing. Irish people keep it so bottled up. You know, like, the plan with Irish people is, like, I'll keep all my emotions right here, and then one day I'll die. Like, in Ireland, it's like, your boy has died, and it's like, all right, bury the boy, do it, bury the boy. Bury the boy. Irish people don't want comfort. Look at a sweater made in Ireland. It's like a turtleneck made out of Brillo pads.
These reactions may be unrecognizable to you, may be different from where you've been before emotionally, especially as type A personalities that tend to suppress the emotional side a little bit more and stay on the logical side. You need to understand that the experiences you're having in this grief, in this grieving process, are normal. What you're going through is not a loss of reality or who you were, but a process of growing. It can be intense at first, an experience of numbness, anger, denial, depression, and everything in between. And again, it'll be different from what you normally experience. So on the grief side, there's five main categories of reactions here. The emotion side. These are common reactions that need to be understood, and I mentioned them a little bit earlier, the numbness, the anger, the denial, depression. And so we need to kind of accept that, hey, yeah, we're going to be in a different emotional state, and that's okay. That's normal. Another category of grief reaction is cognitive. We may have trouble focusing our thoughts or difficulty concentrating. You may feel like you're in a fog. This is not a time to be making huge decisions. It can last days or even weeks. We need space to process the information in our own time, and that's okay. We may be confused, disoriented. You may be in a time compression or a time expansion, that things may feel like they're passing very quickly, or time is dragging on. The days just feel like they won't end. Depending on how close you were to the situation, whether it was happening to you or whether it happened to someone else, you may go into periods of self-blame, feelings of guilt. You may have dreams that put you back in that spot or are very similar to the experience, and external triggers that can put you back in that moment, sort of like a PTSD response, a post-traumatic stress disorder. This can cause worry, or you may feel like you're cut off from others or reality. And these thoughts can be very intrusive and very hard to shake. You may be doing a common task, washing dishes or making dinner. I think I like food. And all of a sudden these thoughts just rush in, and these feelings and emotions wash over your body, and it can be almost crippling. And I know I've felt this myself after the road landing, and I'll talk a little bit more about some of that. There can be physical effects. You may be tired, but even in that fatigue, you also have trouble sleeping. You can get headaches, stomach aches. You could be easily startled because maybe you're not, in reality, you're paying attention to what's going on around you. So things surprise you more easily. And to compensate for that, you may get hypervigilant. You may have increased cravings for caffeines or other substances, even alcohol or drugs. You may feel lightheaded or weak. This is an area where we want to be very careful, because there are maladaptive ways of processing these effects. And there's drugs that postpone the grieving, that make you feel better or make you numb when you're in pain, but they don't actually fix the problem, and they don't help you move through the grieving process. Some other grief reactions are maybe a change in behavior, crying uncontrollably, anger outbursts, avoiding people, places, or situations, driving erratically, unsafe sex, a loss of hygiene or self-care that's atypical of your personality and who you were. So major changes may be a reaction to that grief and that grieving process. Closure is definitely important in the healing process, and we have to let people help. And the last reaction that we see in the grieving process may be a spiritual reaction, where there's a change in belief or relationship in God or a higher power. And that may be where you suddenly find a deeper meaning, or it may be where you completely lose all faith and renounce God. Changes in reactions to clergy or struggle with the meaning of life, justice, fairness, afterlife, and struggle with your own place in the world. And you may retreat from loss of familiar spiritual support. So in these reactions that are normal in the grieving process, we can have emotional, cognitive, physical, behavioral, and spiritual effects in this process. And that's all very normal. That's all very normal after a traumatic event. We do our best to cope on our own. And sometimes the best we have is Jack Daniels. And in my case, after landing on the road, it was Maker's Mark, but that's because I was invited to a party and that's what they had, and gosh, it tasted good. But it didn't help me feel better the next day. It just kind of got me through that night. And luckily I had a place to stay, and I didn't have to be on the road or anything like that. I mean, I wasn't making poor choices on that end. But Jack Daniels or alcohol or drugs are not a recommended prescription, but they may be what you needed at the moment to help you process and get to a place where you can move forward with the healing. But don't let that dominate you. So it's not just go through the five stages and you're done. Denial, anger, why is this happening to me, or why did this happen? Bargaining, I would do anything to change this. Depression, what's the point of going on? I can't do this. Acceptance, this is going to be okay. I'm going to be in a good place. I've reconciled this. All of these may happen in one day. They may happen very rapidly, depending on the event, depending on your own resiliency. Or they may be re-triggered by an anniversary. They may last weeks. And that's okay. Part of our coping, if we are seeing re-triggering by anniversaries, is to anticipate those anniversaries coming up. Take the day off. Do something fun. Do something positive. Do something that's self-care, that makes you feel good. That's right for you and what you want to do, and change that day and what it means to you. I mentioned resiliency earlier. Be aware that everyone is born with resiliency, and some are more resilient than others. But resiliency can also be learned. What you can do as a person who's helping others deal with this, or you yourself, is help create a safe environment to move forward. Help create a safe environment for others to move forward. Focus on the person's perceived social support. Withdrawal is natural. People may not want to show what they perceive as a weakness, what they perceive as, oh, I don't want anybody to see me like this. Encourage them to share. Find someone else who gets it, not just someone who placates or downplays. A shared experience can instill hope in someone who's been there and see that you can overcome, or that these events that have happened to you can be overcome and you can move on and do meaningful things and reconcile that event in your life. In my own personal story with landing on the road, there was a lot of self-medication. I would say there was about 2 weeks of every night I had a considerable amount of Jack Daniels to fall asleep every night, and even then the dreams weren't worth having. So it was harder and harder to want to go to sleep, especially anticipating what was going to be waiting for me once I was asleep, letting that imagination kind of run wild. And that 2 week period ended with me on my motorcycle driving semi aimlessly for about 2 hours, and I went down to a town called Lisbon, where I knew that there was a play going on, and there were some friends from a different peer group that were in the play and were part of the production. And so I popped in while after the play had started, and I just kind of hung out a little bit. And at intermission, I said hi to people, and as the second act started, I left, and I was in the hometown of my mentor. And so I said, I'll drive over there and I'll see what's going on and see if he's up. At this point, it was like 9 o'clock at night. And as I pulled up to the farm, the light in the barn was on. So I went in there and there's my mentor and he's working on a tractor. And he's not having a good day if it's 9 o'clock at night and he's working on a hay baler. And so he's not necessarily in the best mood, but at the same time, he's happy to see me. Maybe he's happy to have someone to vent to as well about the troubles that this baler is giving him and how he's now behind on getting the hay in, but also curious about what I'm doing there. And so I explained, like, I'm having troubles. I'm struggling right now. I've been back in the airplane a week now, and I'm terrified to get in it. I can't sleep. I'm drinking too much. Can't afford to drink this much. And I'm not sure what to do. And he stopped wrenching on the tractor. And he told me a story about losing a gear truck on a 737 coming out of O'Hare and the thing bouncing down the runway and landed in a rental car parking lot and damaged a bunch of cars. And he brought the airplane back around and landed it on 2 out of 3 gear. But he said, look, I'm not going to tell you that I wasn't scared during that. But it worked out. And I have no doubt that you were scared and what you were going through. And it doesn't matter how many times you replay these events in your mind or play the shoulda, coulda, woulda game and think if I'd only done this or if I'd have done this, we'd have made it back to the runway or if this would have happened, you know, it wouldn't happen to us. And none of that matters because the outcome is what it is. And you're okay and the student's okay. And the airplane's okay. Move on. If there's magic in those words. But it took someone who had had an experience similar, and he's had other things as well, but it took someone who could at least relate, someone who could reaffirm, say, hey, it did a good job. It's over. What's next? And that look to the future definitely helped out. After a couple hours, I got back on my motorcycle, I rode home, I went to bed, and I really have not had a problem with that incident since. And part of that also helped me grow, helped increase resiliency. And so situations where I've been scared in an airplane since then, it's helped me cope. It's helped me deal. It's helped me continue doing my job. And even incidents that I've experienced afterwards. All of those experiences have helped me move forward and keep moving forward. And hopefully help others. After my experience at Kent State, there was an incident where a student pilot on their first solo had an excursion off the side of the runway. And it shook the CFI, who had signed them off and was watching the events and all that happen. And I was able to share my experience of dealing with a traumatic event with that CFI and to help them move on. And I got them in touch with my mentor as well. And the university even brought my mentor in to talk to the whole of the flight school, the flight department, all the CFIs, all the students. We had a safety stand down. We had him come in as a guest speaker. And it wasn't just a, you're going to be fine. It's okay. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. It was more than that. And so getting into an airplane nowadays, I don't step out the door of the FBO or the airport or the office unless I'm ready to face whatever that flight is going to bring. I don't leave the house in the morning without knowing that my loved ones know what they mean to me. And that means I can go into this office that is a cockpit, and do that job with a clear head. Because there's no baggage. There's nothing left behind there. So these techniques have helped me, and these techniques have also helped me help others. So the universality of grief reminds you that you're not alone in your grief. What you want to do is construct meaning and reconcile the events in your life, or help others reconcile those events in theirs. Using phrases like, this helped me, maybe it can help you. Or what helped me was telling the loved ones that you love them, or praying before you get into a flight, if that's something that you do. I don't get into an airplane now without the mindset of I'm coming home at the end of the day. And that comes from, in college, my family's a police family, and I used to do ride-alongs with my cousin. And in the preparation, or watching my cousin put on the vest, put on the uniform, put on the duty belt, and going through that process of putting yourself in a headspace where there is nothing in the outside world, it is just this job, is what I have to do to come home at the end of the night, helps me be prepared for the worst possible scenarios. Understand what my job is. So there is no life flash before your eyes reflecting on, I wish I'd have done. Let's just deal with it. So resiliency can be learned. Can be learned from watching others. And it can be learned from experiences. Past experiences. And how you overcame those. Helping others and sharing your own personal experiences can help you while also helping others. Helping other people is a component of coping. We need also to strike a balance between avoidance and confrontation. Don't be grieving all the time, forever. Don't feel guilty about moving on. And don't carry it everywhere you go. If you've ever seen the Saturday Night Live skit, Debbie Downer, doesn't matter what's happening in Debbie Downer's life, a very positive Christmas ski trip or whatever, she's got something negative to say. It doesn't matter how positive the group is, she's going to bring him back down with some traumatic experience or some very sad fact.
And you know, most of all, I'm just thankful for being home for the holidays.
You know, I'm just thankful that I met Michelle this year, and now I get to spend Thanksgiving with your family. You know, I'm really looking forward to getting to know you guys.
Oh, I'm thankful that someone in this family has a date. I was going to bring a guy I met on Match.com, but after we exchanged photos, I never heard from him again.
Staying in the trauma and the grief won't help you to move on. A good technique for helping this process, for helping yourself get back to normality, are action-oriented thinking and behavior patterns. Start doing small things to get back to normal. Even if you never get back to normal, you keep moving towards meaning and purpose in this new reality. Make sure you wake up every day and brush your teeth, comb your hair, be intentional about eating healthy, going to bed at a reasonable time, getting exercise, making purposeful choices that help you take these small steps to getting back to normalcy, and having the discipline to keep going. And it's okay if you slip. We're human. Take a deep breath, pick yourself up, start with those little things again. Have realistic expectations about where you are and where you want to go on this emotional journey. June 22nd, 2013 is a very important date in my life. It's definitely a date that changed my life, because that is the day that I had my job interview with Michael Goulian to move to Boston to take over the aerobatics instructor position at Executive Flyers Aviation. And at the time, I couldn't afford the flight to Boston, so Michael invited me and my father down to the Dayton International Air Show, and we would do the interview at his chalet at the air show. And I thought, gee, this is a great opportunity, and I get to go see an air show. Why not? Even if I bomb the interview, well, I'm still at an air show. How bad can I feel? And it was a fantastic interview. Afterwards, Michael said, stay here, enjoy some food, hang out with your dad, check out the Goodyear tire presentation that happens inside the trailer, and the show's going to start in about 45 minutes. I'm going to go prepare for my show, and you guys hang out. I said, awesome, thank you very much, that's great. And Dad and I did just that. We had some lunch, we watched the Goodyear presentation, we found a table in the shade at the show, and everything kicked off, and one of the first acts was a wing walker. A wing walker act in a steerman, super steerman, with the big motor on board, and Charlie Schwenker at the controls, and Jane Wicker as the wing walker, and they're coming through doing their routine, thoroughly enjoying the show. And they come from show left to right in this inverted pass, with Jane sitting on the bottom of the bottom wing, which is now inverted, so she's on the top of the airplane. And just as they got to right in front of us, that airplane impacted the ground, and this massive fireball and a thump in the chest from the explosion. And I stood up waiting to see the steerman pop out the other side of this fireball like it was the greatest trick I'd ever seen. And there was just nothing. Just silence and fire. And the announcers, everybody remain in your seats, stay off your cell phones, stay away from the site. We're responding to the incident. And here I am with my dad at the job interview for an aerobatic position that's basically the start of my aspirations to become an airshow pilot. And we just witnessed an airshow act crash. There was a long period of silence and sadness and tears. And I got up and I went behind my dad and I grabbed him from behind in a big old bear hug. And I said into his ears, I know what I'm getting into. I understand the risks. And Jane Wicker and Charlie Schwenker understood the risks and the possibilities before they got into the airplane, before they took off today. And they went anyway. And I hope you, as a former combat Marine who went outside the wire of the base in Vietnam to face the same risks to protect his brothers, I know you understand this, and I want you to understand that I understand it as well. As a parent-to-be, that's about all I can hope from my future son. That if they choose to go into this industry or any other industry, that they at least understand it and they go willingly, even though they know, and they do it to the best of their ability, whatever it may be. It thunderstormed so bad after that crash, and we hung out until there was nobody else at the show, and there was a young kid, a teenager, who was volunteering with Michael that weekend. And I sat him down because I didn't know what else to do. He looked like a lost little puppy dog. And I was like, hey, buddy, tell me about yourself. I'm working on my commercial, training over here in Cincinnati. And I want to fly your shows. I want to be a photographer. And we talked with him until there was nothing else. There was nobody else there. And it helped us process what was going on. It helped us become reattached to reality. And I think it helped him. I think it helped him process what was going on. But that night, after the show, we went to the bar. It was like at a Chili's or an Applebee's or something across from the hotel, and sat at the bar. And of course, they got all the TVs, and the big news story is the crash. And people at the bar saying some stupid stuff. I remember being very irritated at that, and Dad could see that it was pissing me off. That kind of goes along with the stages of grief. You know, the denial was instantaneous. You know, the standing up and seeing the fireball and waiting for the airplane to come out the other side. That didn't just happen. They didn't just crash. They're fine. They just pulled off the greatest illusion I've ever seen. That's awesome. And then the anger was happening later at that bar. And it wasn't even that it was happening to me. It was, you know, why did this happen? What happened to them? I knew they stalled. I knew it. I don't remember a depression necessarily hitting. Maybe it was a couple days later when I went back to Kent, because it was what people were talking about there too. And I remember one of the assistant chiefs going, "Dude, what was that? It was the worst experience of my life. It was awful." But talking about it and talked about it a little bit with Michael. He didn't see it. He was on the other side of the airfield. There was an evening in Boston with Michael where he found some old photo albums. And he's just flipping through it and goes, "Oh, this guy died at an air show," flips a page. "This guy died when the motor quit and he tried to put it into some trees," flip. "This guy died at an air show," flip. "This guy died in a motorcycle accident." And so the loss of friends to him wasn't necessarily new either. It's an event that I want to be sad about now. And I recognize that it was not a good day. But it's not like I remember the anniversary either. But it's in me somewhere. A little bit. I don't know how to describe it. It's not like I think about it all the time or actively. And really, this is the most I've thought about it in probably years. But that's now part of the foundation of how I fly. And it's a part of why I do what I do and try to help other people. And while I didn't know Jane and Charlie, they were at the same time family. And I didn't know Jane and Charlie like I knew Lance. But on February 23rd, 2019, a flight instructor and a student that I had been directly involved with went down 3 days after I had left my previous company on a touch-and-go accident. And that one I heard about through Twitter. Somebody had sent a photo of an airplane that 3 days earlier I had been flying, nose down in the dirt. And my reaction was different this time. I knew the airplane. I had to have known who was in it. I didn't right away. They weren't releasing names. I didn't have access to the scheduling software anymore. But I was on Live ATC going back through the recordings of earlier in the day to see who was in that airplane, to hear their voice. And it wasn't for a couple of days that it was confirmed who it was. But even though I didn't work for the company anymore, I made a point the next day to drive down to the offices to see how people were doing, to help in any way that I could. I don't remember if I brought donuts or not. I want to say I did, but I have no idea now. That's something I would have done. I think donuts are a great coping food, glazed. But being there and talking to the owners, talking to the leaders at the school, has this ever happened to you before? No, we've never had anything like this. We're going through it for the first time. And when you're grieving in the workplace for someone who was close to you that you lost, that's a little bit different than just a traumatic event. So what needs to happen there is that leadership needs to take time to recognize the loss, which my previous employer did. They shut down, they closed the school, they brought everybody in. Other things that need to be done is you need to provide clear information, but only that which is known and not speculated. Addressing questions is important, but don't exaggerate. Be honest if you don't know. And the leadership needs to create space for people to share their feelings. Well, we lost an employee back in March of 2017. And this one I was directly involved with at the company. And I'd recommended that we bring in an external facilitator, a grief counselor, that could talk to everyone, address everyone, but then also be available for one-on-one counseling if anybody needed it. And there are companies out there that provide this service for free, or that are resources for this. And Vista's Healthcare is one resource for that as well. And I believe that's actually who we went through at the time, where they provided us information on a local person who was able to do that. And I think it did cost a little bit of money. I don't remember at the time. And I don't remember why. Don't remember why, but I couldn't be there when the counselor was there. I'd organized it, but I couldn't be there. And so in the workplace, need to recognize the loss, provide clear explanations and information, don't exaggerate, don't speculate, and provide those grief counseling services to the employees, because that's the people are what make a company. They're what make a company run, and especially in the customer environment, where in the CFI world, you absolutely are dealing with customers. There needs to be trust and faith on the employee side, on the customer side, or it won't be safe, period. But as leaders, you have to take care of your people. If it's appropriate, ceremonies or a ritual in recognition of the life that was lost can have tremendous impact with the group. Simple things as much as as little as a memorial, or even setting up a scholarship fund. And so the reason that this episode is coming out now is recently the U.S. Navy had a crash in the T-6 of a Lieutenant Rhiannon Ross and a U.S. Coast Guard Ensign Morgan Garrett. They passed away, unfortunately, on October 23rd, 2020. So all of these... This has been kind of a high-profile year for losses. January 24th, we lost Steve Andelin, who was a prior U.S. Unlimited Aerobatic Champion and a member of the U.S. National Team on two different occasions. A current member of the U.S. National Team, Mark Nowoselski, died the day after in a plane crash. Both of these guys in plane crashes, two very experienced aviators, respected individuals in the industry. On June 2nd, 2016, we lost Blue Angel number 6, Marine Corps Captain Jeff Koos. And in the aviation world, we may know people that we've lost, or we may lose people in the future. Well, we're definitely going to, unfortunately. Wish we wouldn't. I wish we wouldn't lose anybody in the future. And it's not even about losing people. It's not even about crashes or incidents. It's things that scared us. And frankly, we need to be as willing to talk about the things that scared us in the airplane as the best easy days flying, with the beautiful sunrises and the awesome clouds and seeing a 360-degree rainbow, all the awesome stuff. We also need to be there, willing and able to share some of the negatives as well, and to make sure that we use each other as a support system. And I'm not saying that seeing a professional is necessarily required. If you have done all these other steps and you've talked to peers and you still can't get over the grief and it's affecting your safety in the aircraft, please absolutely see a professional. A good friend of mine and a former coworker recently lost a very close relative, and I cannot imagine the grief that they must have experienced, but they took themselves out of the cockpit. And they came back little by little, and they're back doing a little bit more flying now than before. I don't think they're back to 100%, but he didn't rush it. He definitely didn't rush getting back. Now, the weight of this grief may be something that you haven't built up the resiliency to bear. I want to encourage you to find help, to talk to peers, to talk to people, to talk to other pilots who may have had shared experiences, find a trusted source, a family member, a loved one, but not just somebody who's going to pat you on the head and say, there, everything's going to be okay, but someone who can really relate. If you can't overcome this on your own, and you're not sure where else to turn, I want to encourage, as someone who has lost family members to suicide, I want to encourage you to reach out to the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, 1-800-273-8255, if you need that help. If you need it, get it. Kind of like declaring Mayday in the airplane, Squawking 7700. If you need it, use it. It's a resource for you. Nobody's going to look down on you for asking for help. No, I'm not a psychologist. I did consult with a psychologist and a grief counselor and a behavioral specialist in the creation of this episode. And frankly, for the previous events that I had experienced in my life, I probably should have talked to him sooner and actually gotten some professional help. But I had a support system I don't even think I really knew about in my family and in my peers, and I may not have realized how much they helped. And there are situations where I've put myself out there to help other people, and I want to encourage you to be that shoulder as well, that person to listen, that person to empathize. And maybe you've had a similar experience and you can help. But I know I'll never forget Lance Bricker or Sidney Mitty or Jane Wicker or Charlie Schwenker. Blue skies and tailwinds. And I'll see you on the B-side.
Things would always be as they were then. I wish I wrote with this pen words that could somehow bring you back again. And now I am afraid to choose between the life I want and what I stand to lose. And I try not to sing the blues, but I know there's no use, 'cause it explains my view. And we all change was a bullet downring. We live on the B-side now because you are gone, but we'll see you on the other side. It sang Tiny Dancer wrong. Now it's our favorite song from the place where we live the love.
On the B-side, we live on the B-side.
That was B-Side by Downplay, a song that was actually written for Lance Bricker and used with permission from Dustin Bates of Starset. Other clips in this video, John Mulaney's New in Town, courtesy of Comedy Central. Debbie Downer, Thanksgiving, courtesy of Saturday Night Live. Thank you all very much for joining us here on episode 42. I'm Rob. If you like what you heard, please feel free to share it with your friends, and especially anybody that you think may need to hear it. Check us out on our other social media pages, spreadaviation.com, as well as Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, all Spread Aviation. Matt will be back soon, hopefully in episode 43. But in the meantime, everybody out there, fly safe.